six. Mrs. Durr, would you like to testify? I can give the committee a quick rundown while she's coming forward, and that is the purpose of this bill is to provide some finality in the administrative process, wherein appeals are taken to the commissioner, and they seem to end up on a merry-go-round called a hearing officer, who then comes forward with a decision. The commissioner does not like the decision. The commissioner remands back for further hearing, and this has impacted Valley Hospital, and if you'll see from the backup you have within the packet, it's also impacted several other hospitals across the state. Our purpose in this legislation is basically to provide that once a hearing officer has made a determination, that there will then be a period of time within which the department must make a decision, and failure to do so within that 30-day period will allow the decision to be appealed to the superior courts, where final resolution will occur. With that, give us your full name, please.
Hey, my name is Lorraine Durr. I'm the president and CEO of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I gave you a letter stating our support, and with me today is Bob Valiant, who is the administrator of the Juno Hospital. He will be testifying. And then also online, another one of our members, Sue Mason, who is an attorney in Anchorage, will be testifying. So I would really defer to them because they are the experts in the matter.
Okay. We have changed slightly the original bill and have prepared a CS. The chair would entertain a motion to adopt the CS for discussion purposes. Senator Ferguson.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee adopt version D, CS for Senate Bill 106, dated 3/19/99.
Is there objection? There being no objection, it's adopted as the bill before the committee. Thank you, Senator Ferguson. Are there any questions, Mrs. Durr? Thank you very much. Let's see. Next, I've got Bob, you're up, I guess. And we'll get to Jay. Bob, have you had a chance to review the CS?
I have. And Bartlett Regional can support the CS
as presented.
Thank you today for taking time to listen to a poor hospital administrator talk about the perils of running a hospital in the state of Alaska, and taking the time to meet with me and listen to our concerns and frustrations relative to the appeals process in the Department of Health and Human Services. As an example of the dilemma facing Alaska hospitals as a result of the current regulations, I'd like to cite our experience over the past number of years. In December of 1993, Bartlett Regional Hospital put an MRI unit into the hospital. In doing that, it's a magnetic resonance imaging. It's an X-ray modality.
That requires a waiver of your Medicaid reimbursement?
No, not a waiver. If it would have cost us more than $1 million to put that in, we would have had to meet the certificate of need requirements for the state. But we brought that in under the $1 million cap, or when we proposed it, it was under the $1 million cap, and we were well into the project when we found out that we were going to go over that $1 million cap by approximately $60,000. And we went ahead and installed it. In June of 1995, the state sent an audit unit to the hospital, and they concluded they would disallow from our cost report the MRI expenses associated with depreciation and interest expense because their conclusion was that we had not filed properly and followed the certificate of need regulations.
You mean because of the $60,000?
Because of the overrun, yes. We appealed that decision, and 18 months after we appealed, in January of 1997, the hearing officer, who happens to be an employee of the department, issued a decision partially in Bartlett's favor. And that decision was that the MRI costs up to the $1,000 cap for the COM threshold should be allowed.
You mean $1 million?
$1 million.
The $1 million, I'm sorry, yeah.
And I'm not saying that to be petty, because I really don't know if there was some other cap or not. That...
Oh, no. Uh-huh. No, that's fine. I appreciate being corrected. At that time, the commissioner remanded the findings of the hearing officer back to determine if a CON had been required. And in December of 1997, the hearing officer was instructed. So there was about an 11-month period between the time the commissioner remanded that back, or between the time that the MRI costs were disallowed and the time it got remanded back to the hearing officer. And
in hearing officer?
I don't know. I can't answer that question, whether it was the same hearing officer or a different one. I can look. I have the documentation here. In December of 1997, the commissioner sent the appeal to the hearing officer with the instruction, as I said, to determine whether a certificate of need was needed. In August of 98, 12 months later, the decision by the hearing officer was that a CON was not required. And then in August of 1998, the department asked the hearing officer to reconsider the decision again. As you can see, we're on a merry-go-round here. It has now been 38 months since the original denial of the costs associated with the installation of our MRI. As I discuss this, you can see the number of frustrations that become apparent in this process. First of all, there's time and therefore money involved in each of these hearings because of the legal costs incurred by the hospital. Secondly, the MRI issue has been looked at a number of different times in a number of different ways. When the state does not like the outcome, more time and money is spent to look at it another way. At one point, the state staff added debits and credits together and argued that our project cost nearly $2 million. Since we have an open appeal related to our 1996 Medicaid rate, it has been necessary that subsequent payment rates for 97, 98, and so on be appealed pending the resolution of the issue, which also affects each of these years. In other words, because our rate from 94 was set at a certain level, denying those MRI payments, then each succeeding year that has carried forward. The hearing officer is an employee of the department. Concern should exist that there be a situation of bias against the facilities. However, the hearing officer keeps ruling in our favor and still no closure to the issue. To date, we have spent in excess of $100,000 in attorney fees going through this appeal process. People wonder why the cost of health care keeps escalating. And I would contend that this is one good example of why. I'd like to thank you for your time and attention to this matter. An interesting note is, in July of this year, we made the final payment, we made the final payment on our MRI. When we financed it, we didn't have the cash to buy it in 93, so we financed it. In the meantime, paid it off, and we're still waiting for the state to determine whether they will pay us for the service provided to Medicare patients since that time or not. I would appeal to you to pass this legislation so we can at least get some relief when the commissioner rules adversely to us from the courts if we deem the if we deem that decision to be in error. Thank you. I'll answer any questions.
I know there have been some technological changes in MRIs. When do you believe you'll be replacing that equipment with something newer?
It's an interesting question. In fact, at this month's hospital board meeting, the hospital board voted to replace it in the next 4 or 5 months as soon as one becomes available.
So you will have already not only paid it off, but kind of used it up.
It's been used up and is in need of replacement, yes.
Senator Torgerson?
Can you briefly walk us through the payment difference by not having this approved versus if it was approved? Is it amount per day or?
We, as near as we can figure, and as it would be a negotiated figure with the department, but our financial consultants are telling us that we have in the neighborhood of $800,000 that's due us from the state.
To make it reimbursable under Medicare?
Under Medicaid.
The
Medicaid program would owe us approximately $800,000 for those years, 94 through the current year.
But you have been billing for your services to some folks that are private insurance or whatever.
That's correct. Yeah.
Any further questions?
No.
Thank you very much, Bob. Appreciate you coming in.
You're welcome.
Jay, you're up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Jay Livey, Health and Social Services, and with me is Kristen Bominjan from the Department of Law, who's going to help me out with some of the legal questions regarding administrative law, if there are any. What I have handed out, I believe staff handed out to folks, is a spreadsheet. Well, two things. One is a spreadsheet that looks like this, if you don't have a colored version. And I want to walk through that because I think it's necessary to establish the context within which this appeals process occurs. And then secondly, I have another just fact sheet with summary of appeals activity that I'd like to go over also with the committee just to see if there are any questions about the basic process. Mr. Chairman, I think that if we look at the, starting by looking at the flow chart, it's called reimbursement rate and appeals process. The first page of this describes the rate-setting process. Mr. Chairman, the department sets the reimbursement rates to hospitals, and what that means is we decide how much we're going to pay hospitals on behalf of Medicaid-eligible clients. Now, I want to make three points about this rate system, and those appear in the first box. First of all, $140 million is about what we pay annually out to the hospitals and nursing homes, to the facilities for whose rate we set under the system. That's about 40% of the entire Medicaid budget. So I just want to make the point that this system, the integrity of this system is a big deal to the department and a big deal in terms of budget. Secondly, the way the rate works is each facility gets its own rate each year. So every year, we decide how much we're going to pay Bartlett Hospital. And each year is a separate year. They all act, even though they're related, the fact is that we have to set a new rate for a new facility each year. It's one of the inefficiencies of our rate-setting system. But it's in the law, and there it is. Third, Mr. Chairman, what we pay is we pay a hospital or a nursing home a rate that's based on the cost of their providing services to Medicaid clients. And now that cost structure is there as more or less an artifact of old federal law. Federal law, which was repealed during the Balanced Budget Act a year ago, said that states had to pay cost to hospitals and nursing homes, to facilities. It was what was called the old Boren Amendment. I'm not sure if you all remember that. and it was a federal mandate that essentially told states how much they had to pay. Well, the last year in the Balanced Budget Act, that Boren Amendment was repealed. We still have in our law the state equivalent of that, which says that we have to base our rates on the cost the facilities have of providing that service. Now, I want to move to box two because...
Can we ask questions?
Sure, go right ahead. You said.
Do you audit the cost of the service?
I'm sorry, sir?
Do you audit their cost of service?
Yes, that comes under box number two. That's the point. That was the next step I was going to get to, Senator.
Well, maybe I ought to let you go ahead.
Okay. Yes, now under box two, what that shows you is how it is that we determine cost. Because cost, of course, means different things to different people, and I assure you it means something different to Bob Valiant, than maybe it does to the Medicaid rate advisory folks. So in the second box, we determine cost. And the way we do that is we have each facility fill out a cost report and send that to us. And what that report does is very complicated and very technical, but essentially what it does is the facilities list all of their costs that the facility has incurred, and they send that to us. Now, that's what we audit. We audit that cost report. That becomes the basis for setting the rate. So what we do is go and look at their cost report. For example, in the case of a hospital, 20% of a hospital's patients might be Medicaid eligible. Consequently, when we see their cost report, what we want to do is make sure that they've apportioned all those costs so that Medicare is only paying its share. It's those kinds of things that get audited in the cost report. Once that cost report is audited, going back up, and did that answer your question, Senator, about the audit?
I'll get to it.
Okay. Thank you. Once we get that audit done, then that audit flows into the rate-setting system.
Mr. Chairman, it would really help me to understand what the witness is getting at, so I can try to understand what this explanation is necessary for. If I knew what the premise of the witness's position was going to be, I might be able to listen to this and try to figure out how it's relevant. But as it is, it's just a volume of information about something I'm not particularly familiar with, and it's not very meaningful to me.
Thank you.
Can you respond to that?
Senator, what we're trying to show here is that the appeals process that is impacted by SB 106 is all part of the existing rate-setting system, and that to be able to put the changes that are proposed in SB 106 in perspective, it's necessary to understand what is being appealed and what are the decisions that have been made throughout the process that end up being appealed. We believe, Mr. Chairman, that SB 106, and I had a chance just a minute ago to look at the CS, we believe that SB 106 would violate the department's ability and capability to actually keep control of this rate-setting process. And so in order to make that case, Mr. Chairman, I wanted to explain the whole process so we could see how the appeals fit into it.
Let me ask them. Tell me what you audit. Apparently, you audit just what they report that they give you.
Through the chair, yes.
So then your determination is just that they spend the money in the categories that they said they're spending it?
Yes, the audit is self-reporting. I mean, I'm sorry, the cost report is essentially self-reporting. And so then we go in and we audit that cost report.
So it's not really an audit. I mean, I don't call that an audit. That's just verification of numbers.
That's correct. Through the chair, yes.
It's a long way from an audit.
It's a long way from an audit. That's correct.
Okay. So what are your – give me an example of high and low Medicaid reimbursement rates. Who's the lowest in the state?
Well, we pay for nursing homes, Senator, the lowest in the state is probably Providence Extended Care in Anchorage at about $220 a day. The highest is probably Sitka Community Hospital at about $550 a day.
I think the lowest is Soldotna Heritage Place at $187, and your high, I think, is Cordova, close to $600. But irregardless, we're not arguing over numbers, how can you justify that much difference in operating costs between $150 to $600? and tried to tell me you audited all this, and apparently by the word audited, that means that you agree with those numbers.
Through the chair, Senator, one of the reasons is Heritage Place is, you're right, Heritage Place is the least expensive facility we have. And the way the rate setting system works is we set an individual rate for an individual facility. So if the individual costs can be validated, if they're legitimate costs under Medicare, then those costs are allowed. Just because we do an audit of the Medicaid cost report doesn't mean that it's an efficient facility.
Well, but that's what I'm trying to get to is the efficiency of a facility. To me, that should have more to do with, you know, if you're worried about spending money, which it appears that you sort of are, and we're tangled up in the regulation review process, which comes back to whether or not you want to approve to spend more money. That's why I think you disapprove most of these. It isn't nothing to do with some of the other things. It's just that you don't want to direct any more Medicaid money into that. But I'm having a hard time understanding why you have that much disparity in rates, why we don't have some sort of set rate factor across the state that's adjusted by area cost differentials or some other thing.
To the chair, Mr. Chairman, Senator, there's a couple of reasons for that. One is, remember I said that we had to, that the old Boren Amendment?
It's gone, though.
It's gone, but we
so
still...
So are you recommending we change the state statute to do what I'm suggesting?
Mr. Chairman, if we were to do that, I think it would help to even out the cost.
Is your suggestion change the statutes included in this mess here?
No, it's not included in this package, Mr. Chairman.
You will get that to us.
Yes,
I think you need a whole lot of cleanup on this. We're just scratching the surface here with trying to use the regulatory process to slow down the approval of Medicaid rates. And we all know we've had a moratorium on this for a period of time, maybe not on MRI units. Or did the moratorium go to those? That too.
Through the chair, no, Senator. The moratorium was only on long-term care beds, not on acute care.
Senator Donnelly, I think it's really important what Senator Torrey is talking about, but I'm still a little bit overwhelmed by the specific proposal before us. And the question I had is, how would following the recommendation of the hearing officer have hampered your ability to do your job in the rate setting?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Donnelly, let me give you an example of that.
No, I don't want an example. I want you to explain, in this case, how it would have hampered your ability to do the job.
Through the chair, Senator Donnelly, the hearing officer and the way it's functioned, the hearing officer's function within the department, is that the hearing officer provides the department a check on the process. So the hearing officer generally understands what department policy is, but may write a decision that doesn't completely follow our department policy. And historically, we've not hired our hearing officers based on the idea that they essentially tell us what we want to hear. We want hearing officers to be a check on our system and tell us if there are places where we could have done the job better. Now, in order to have the integrity of the process, that means then that the commissioner's office and the department needs to have a chance to go back and look at what that hearing officer has written and imprint the department policy on that if that wasn't done the first time around. And that's what the remand process lets the department do. To the extent that the time, or in the CS, the way I read the CS just briefly, I believe that gave us 30 days to make a final decision. To the extent that the hearing officer has not given us a decision that we can accept or a decision that is the departmental policy, then to make sure that policy gets imprinted on that decision within 30 days may be very difficult.
I don't understand what you mean by imprinting the policy.
I'd love to have you explain to me. I mean, the policy that the hearing officer is supposed to be following, I would assume, is contained within the administrative code regulations that have been drafted, which that hearing officer must then make interpretation of as to whether or not the facts fit within those parameters. What is this policy that should be imprinted on him? It almost sounds genetic. I don't know. We do that with fish a lot.
Through the chair, if I could, let me give you an example. Let me use Mr. Valiant's example. The MRI question that came up with regard to Bartlett, had to do with whether or not the $1 million threshold for his MRI was triggered. Now, the hearing officer wrote a decision that essentially said that if the facility that's building a project says at the beginning of the project that the $1 million threshold was not going to be triggered, and then later it was, then that was in conformance with law and regulation. We thought there was a policy issue involved in that decision that had to do with how as an agency then do we know what the cost of a project is going to be. So why couldn't you build a $1.5 million project, tell us it was going to cost $900,000, and we would lose our ability to review that project, which is what we thought the law and the regulations authorized us to do. So in that case, there was a policy question from the perspective of the hearing officer about what the role of the department would be and how that role was implemented based on the existing law and the statute. And that was the issue that came down to us to decide.
Senator Torgerson, I'll get right back to
you. Well, do you approve projects less than $1 million?
No.
Yes.
You just don't issue a certificate of need.
I'm sorry, to the chair. A certificate of need for project less than $1 million is not required.
Right, but you do review the projects?
We do review the projects.
And then when do they put their rate in for increased rate if it's under $1 million? I assume that you adjust the rate automatically with the certificate of need, so that's part of the process with the CON. But under $1 million, when do you set that rate?
To the chair. Senator, you see, on this part of the process where it says cost report audited by the state, in the case of Bartlett Hospital for their MRI, had that MRI not needed a CON and that project had been approved by the state, then the depreciation cost for that MRI would have gone into their cost report. And it would have been approved. Once it was in the cost report and approved, then it would automatically flow into the rate.
So using Bartlett for another example, what is the difference in their reimbursable rate between $1,999,000 and $1,060,000? What's the difference in the rate?
I don't know, Mr. Chairman. I haven't done that calculation. Through the chair, I admit it's pretty small. I agree, it's pretty
just
small.
Chasing something that doesn't even need to be chased around.
Let me get to Senator Donnelly.
Well, my point was, Mr. Chairman, that his example is $1 million versus $1.5 million, and that's not the case that was presented before. So it's $1 million, and he's $60,000 over, not $500.
Senator Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I really wanted to talk to the Department of Law at this point because I think the problem shifted over to the realm of the Department of Law. How could the Department of Law have an opinion about this process? And if so, what is it? Let's start at that point.
Maybe I'll start for the record. My name is Kristen Bomingen. I'm from the Department of Law. I think that in response to what's been provided so far by Mr. Livey, the purpose of the commissioner's review of a hearing officer decision at all is touches on many things. It touches on the factual premises that the hearing officer reached the decision, but also a review of how that hearing officer applied the regulations and whether that interpretation is consistent with the departmental interpretation, the longstanding departmental interpretation of regulations. There are occasions in which hearing officer decisions that are recommended are not necessarily informed or consistent with other agency decisions that have been made, and the agency has to be concerned about its own consistency and appropriateness and applying those regulations to all entities. And so I think if I'm answering your question, this is consistent with the administrative principles for the final agency decision maker to have to evaluate whether this decision is consistent with every other instance in which those principles have been applied. In the particular case that we were discussing, I think that there was a disparity.
You guys approved this behavior? The Department of Law specifically approved this remand for the second time, saying that you didn't like the decision of the hearing officer? And
through the chair and Senator Donnelly, it's not for the Department of Law to approve. The Department of Law doesn't become actively involved in the agency decision.
Well, you advise them. You're their legal advisor.
Advise them as to the law in that case, and yes, advise them to the point of whether this is consistent with administrative legal principles and.
Well, wait a second. That I've never even heard that phrase yet. Consistent with administrative legal principles. What about the Constitution? What about the intent of the statutes that there be some finality in this process, so you're not denying people access to the courts? What about those principles? Shouldn't your advice incorporate all those principles?
Certainly. All of those principles are considered.
Well, it doesn't sound like you were considering those. It sounds like all you said there was you're considering what's consistent with administrative regulation principles, which isn't what I would hope the advice from the Department of Law would be narrowed down to.
Through the chair, if I may. Certainly, I'm presented with a full array of circumstances, and we are addressing one particular instance here. I'm trying to respond to the specifics of the question put to me. But, yes, we always consider all of the principles. And
given the consideration of all those principles, don't you think this behavior was wrong? And don't you think the correct course of action would have been to modify the regulations to be more specific so that future hearing officers wouldn't do this, rather than keep remanding it, trying to hope they change their mind?
Through the chair, there may be many different options that would be appropriate.
Did you recommend to them that they pursue clarifying their regulations?
I'm certain that all kinds of recommendations have come up in different contexts of reviewing this case.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator, a couple things. First of all, that is exactly one of the benefits of having a hearing officer who is acting somewhat independently and reviewing this process independently. I suspect we will go back and take a look at those regulations.
You haven't done that yet?
First of all, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to correct one thing first.
Okay.
That decision was actually only remanded back to the hearing officer once.
Okay.
That decision came to us. We remanded it back on that issue. The hearing officer then proceeded to do a partial summary judgment on her view of how that issue should be resolved. There were other issues within that appeal that had to do with the rights of the ability and the right of the state to even use audits in setting rates. And that's been challenged by a number of facilities. The department has fought that vigorously as far as policy goes. We believe that we should be able to use audits to set rates. And in fact, the legislature a couple of years ago reaffirmed that right in bill in legislation. But there are still some rates out there that were done prior to that time. One of the issues in the Bartlett appeal had to do with that audit issue. That audit issue is currently in the Superior Court. Consequently, the Bartlett other appeals have been stayed depending on how that issue comes out.
So it wasn't remanded the second time on the issue of
The Bartlett appeal is remanded. I'm sorry, excuse the chair, Senator. The Bartlett appeal is remanded to fix the CON issue, and the hearing officer wrote a different.
The what issue? What issue?
I'm sorry, the MRI issue.
Okay.
Certificate of need issue. I'm sorry, the MRI issue. The hearing officer wrote a summary judgment on that, which is not sent to us yet because the other issue involved in that appeal was the use of audits to set rates. When the hearing officer sent that appeal to us, sent her proposed decision to us initially, her determination was that the facility was right. The department did not have to, the department could not use audits to set rates. Well, that is patently something that we can't agree with. We're just not going to agree with that until the Superior Court tells us we have to. It's going to cost us a whole lot of money. If we can't do audits, then we might as well ask the facilities how much money they want, and we'll give it to them.
Well, let me ask the Department of Law something at this point. I'm not an administrative law attorney. You are. Is there any option to bifurcate the case at that point and go ahead and say, well, okay, we're going to separate this out. We agree. Go ahead and settle this issue of the MRI or whatever it is. and then go ahead and maintain that issue on appeal or keep that issue alive?
Through the chair, Senator Donnelly, I think that would be an option. I think generally that would be something that the parties would have the prerogative to agreeing to. It would not necessarily be something that would be directed or imposed upon the parties. I haven't looked into the question of whether it could be imposed upon the parties, but generally speaking, I wouldn't believe there'd be a prohibition to taking that course of action were that the preferred course for the parties involved.
So if that was an option, did the department explore that option?
Through the chair, Mr. Chairman, my understanding of what happened is that because the audit itself, there was never any evidentiary hearing on the audit adjustments themselves, because the hearing officer had just said you can't use these audits, so it doesn't matter what those audits are, what's entailed in those audits. So the decision came to us. We said, no, wait a minute. We think we can use audits. So we sent it. We remanded it back to the hearing officer so she can hold evidentiary hearing on the specific facts of those audit adjustments. And that's what has to happen next within this process. Now, it would be possible, I believe, if the parties wanted to, and it's within the hearing officer's discretion, and she's managing this appeal, it would be in her discretion to split the issues apart. I know that has happened on some of the other issues where audits, the ability to use audits has been an issue. Some facilities have wanted the whole issue stopped until that gets decided in Superior Court. Other issues attorneys, I think, have decided that they want to split the issue and go forward with the parts of the appeals that they can.
Senator Torgerson, go ahead. I'm trying to, was the audit on the MRI itself, or was the audit based upon past operating history? And what are you arguing over there?
Through the chair, the audit would have been, in that case, the audit would have been on the depreciation expense that would have been shown up in the cost report, that Medicaid would have been asked to pay for a portion of that, for the portion of the Medicaid patients that use it. And so the cost report would have had a depreciation expense in it that we would have disallowed.
Overall facilities rate.
Right. So again, it wasn't really an audit. It was their suggested cost to operating using the depreciation rate for you to set the Medicaid rate.
Right.
That's correct.
And when you've been using the word audit a lot in your last explanation also, again, is that a true audit or is that merely a verification of numbers claim that was sent in?
Yes, through the chair, that is a verification of the numbers they have sent in. We take their cost report, and then we go out and, as any audit, we don't audit 100% of those costs that come into us. We probably audit 30 or 40%. That's what we have the resources for. And check and verify the numbers that we can, the ones that we think are most important in setting the rate. So it's not an audit in the sense that we're going in and auditing every transaction and every dollar. That's correct.
You take their report they've sent to you, what they think their Medicaid cost reimbursement should be. You then go back into their facility, right?
Right.
With personnel.
Correct.
And then you go through to have them prove to you within the facility that these amounts of money were actually expended for the categories that they have placed them in, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct.
Senator Donnelly, did you have other questions there?
I was just going to ask of the Department of Law. The department says that the hearing officer could do this thing, separate these issues, and then go ahead and rule on the ones that weren't being perpetuated. Couldn't the commissioner recommend that also? I mean, couldn't in the remand to the hearing officer, couldn't the commissioner have recommended that and try to get this one issue resolved?
Through the chair to Senator Donnelly, as I said, I haven't examined it fully to find out if there would be any problems that would arise by directing that or imposing that. It seems as though that's still within the control of the department sufficiently that could be requested or instructed. Generally, a partial decision is provided to the commissioner's office, I believe, only as an advisory mm-hmm. kind of decision prior to the formal proposed decision under the APA, which then gets filed and all issues are resolved. And there may be some reasons that parties do not wish to resolve only some issues instead of taking the whole thing as a package. And I just haven't examined whether that would be appropriate to direct it in that way.
So the first remand back to the hearing officer, there was instructions to use the the audit findings to make a determination of whether or not these expenses were appropriate. And, but there's been a second one since then. There was a decision.
To the chair, Senator, the first remand had my recollection was the first remand had two pieces to it. The first was to reexamine this, the MRI issue, and the second was to go ahead and take evidence on the actual audits and the actual cost report itself. Because the first time the decision came to us, none of that information was included within the decision.
Okay, so then what happened?
I believe, Mr. Chairman, that the that evidentiary hearing was scheduled for last fall, and I believe it's occurred. Well, I'm not sure about that. But once that hearing's occurred, then the results of that hearing in the commissioner's office and the hearing officer's decision, based on her view of those audit exceptions and that cost report, will come to us in a proposed decision.
Well, I got the impression is that it happened twice.
And you're representing it's only happened once. Can somebody explain to me what I'm not understanding here? Is anybody else got this? Something I missed?
From the time the claim was submitted, you were here when Bob testified. That was, what, 94?
In 95, actually, when the audit took place.
The audit took place in 95. It's now 99. How many times has it been up and down the ladder, whether it was just one issue, two issue, five issues? And what's the current status?
Mr. Chairman, the proposed decision has only come to us once. We've only remanded that decision once. And where it is now is, I believe, and Bob, maybe you can help me. I believe the evidentiary hearing, the second evidentiary hearing has been set, has happened, and the hearing officer should be taking it under advisement.
I have two decisions from hearing officers here.
Mm-hmm.
On hearings, and in August of 98 was the second hearing, and at that time, the Department of Health and Social Services asked the hearing officer to reconsider the decision. And that's the most information I have, current information I have. So it has been to the hearing officer twice. It's come back from the hearing officer. I have right here the hearing officer's recommendation. Both times it came back saying pay the hospital.
Mr. Chair, I think the second time it came back as a summary judgment, if I'm not correct, and not a decision to us that we had to react to. And so that summary judgment is just sitting there now in the hearing officers.
Doesn't the commissioner have to take action on that?
No, Mr. Chairman, it's not a proposed decision.
A summary judgment's not a final decision? Well, that's sure different than anything I've ever learned in court.
Yeah, go right ahead, Mr.
Chairman. I believe what will happen is that summary judgment will be rolled into the proposed decision that the commissioner, that the hearing officer sends us after she does the evidentiary hearing on the audit issue.
Really?
Mr. Chairman, that's my understanding of the process.
And go ahead,
Mr. Chairman, I'm not certain I'm remembering it all with specificity, but I believe that it was a partial summary judgment, really,
right,
addressing only the issue of the MRI and the
right.
CON concern. That is submitted informationally to all of the parties involved, but is not submitted to the hearing, to the commissioner's office with pending action, because the other issues remain to be resolved and it will be rolled into the final decision.
Okay, Senator Torgerson.
Let's get back to the legislation.
Yeah.
We're going way off on trying to try everybody. Why doesn't this bill work? I mean, you know where we're coming from. We want to sharpen you guys up, get some decisions out of you that don't drag feet and do a bunch of stuff. So why doesn't this work? Now, I know your chart, but your chart doesn't, I'm not impressed by your chart.
Okay.
We're just telling you to get something done a little quicker, so.
Mr. Chairman, the CS is in front of the committee. Okay. I think the reason this bill doesn't work for us is, because 30 days, essentially, is not enough time for the department.
45 days in.
I'm sorry, Mr.
No, it says 30. 45 enough? That's a hell of a lot better than 4 months, or 38 months, or whatever we're at. I'm trying to trying to negotiate a settlement here. Now, we're not going to wait and have a hearing officer hear this. So it's 45 days we can do that.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to think about how long a time would make sense. When the hearing I brought with me just for for illustration purposes, I didn't bring up the tables, but back then those black binders.
I don't care about more illustrations either. Let's get to the meat of the bill.
Yeah.
Is 30 days not long enough? Is 45 too long, then?
I don't think 45 is long enough either. I'm not sure that.
Jay, you only have You only have six appeals or something like that. I mean, I don't understand the big workload problem you have. You're sitting down reading the decision and making a reading the hearing officer stuff and making a decision. Six proposed decisions have been remanded to the hearing officer in the past 4 years. So is that what we're talking about in this bill? These
right.
Six decisions to get somebody to make a decision on them. So that's six in 4 years. That's 48 months divided by six, right?
You got more than one hearing officer?
One hearing officer, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Don't seem like a big workload.
Mr. Chairman, what happens is there are 40 appeals, and what happens is when a facility comes up for appeal, if a facility has more than one appeal for 1 year out, then those appeals are rolled together. This is just a transcript for the North Star decision, which had 4 or 5 years rolled together.
That's the problem we're trying to get at, Jay, is that once a decision is not made, it impacts every year's filings after that, and they all have to go back through and be amended because somebody failed to make a decision 5 years ago. I mean, I've got two people hanging on the teleconference here from Alaska Regional. I think one of them may even, Sue Mason, she's with Cecile Young. I mean, how long has Valley Hospital been hanging? Some of theirs go back to 92, don't they?
Mr. Chairman, I went back and checked the history on Valley Hospital, and there have been five Valley Hospital appeals. It's actually the last bullet on my summary of appeals activity here. There have been five Valley rates that have been appealed during this time. I think two were settled. One has currently stayed at the request of the facility because it has the audit issue involved. And then the 98-99 rates have yet to be scheduled by the hearing officer.
Well, I guess that's what I'm getting at, is that because these things roll on, they really start compounding themselves in the volume of paperwork. I don't even know how an auditor can go back after with the Juneau facility. How did the auditor go back and make decisions about what are acceptable costs? To make decisions based on the same thing that's still rolling. That has its impact on the overall rate. Do you not pay any of the rate if this decision has not been made, or is it that you only pay parts of the rate and other parts stay on appeal? I don't understand how that works either.
Chairman, what we pay is we pay the part of the rate that has been approved in the cost report. So if the cost report if the cost report says that the rate should be based on $1 million worth of cost, then that's what we'll set our rate on. If the facility argues about $100,000 of that cost, then that cost won't be paid.
How much money do you have on appeal right now? Of these 40 appeals, what's the total to lose them all?
Somewhere between, if we lost them all, somewhere between $10 and $12 million probably.
Yearly?
That's the total amount.
But is that an annualized cost? Will it go on like that for year after year after year, or is that just a once-in-a-lifetime cost?
Mr. Chairman, once we paid those costs, it would go on, because those costs then get rolled into the facility's cost base. And so it would show up year after year.
Somebody's paying those costs anyhow. That's the part that has me bothered, because I think I know who it is. It's me that pays those costs when you don't.
Or if you don't have insurance.
Senator Torgerson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think you just scratched on the tip of the iceberg here. We need to go in and look at this whole mechanism that they do. This is, the more you get into this, the more it needs legislative fixing all the way through the process, just to limit appeals.
You know what it needs? It needs a better executive branch is what it needs.
Yeah.
I mean, this situation should have been corrected by executive action a long time ago. You could have fixed these regs so they're clearer, so you wouldn't have all these pending appeals of what the regs mean.
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy with the bill where you have it. I don't see anything to change.
I don't want to cut off these two people that have been patiently waiting for us out there, but I did want to give both Jay and Kristen an opportunity to summarize, if they'd like, and make a final statement, and then I'll turn to these other two witnesses, because they've been hanging out there for about an hour now.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, and I would agree with Senator Torgerson. I think there are some things in the rate-setting system that lead to this appeals process that need to get looked at. I guess I would just say that putting together the record that comes to the department that becomes the basis for the proposed decision is a very long and complicated process. This is just a transcript from one appeal. And how long it would take the commissioner's office or the hearing officer to go back and rewrite a proposed decision, or to go back and schedule an evidentiary hearing, such as we need to do in Bartlett, to get the additional evidence that's needed on that audit, I'm not sure if that could get done within 45 days or 60 days. A lot of it depends on, it also, of course, depends on the facility council and whether that council is available.
Thank you. I can only note for you that as an attorney in a major case, that's the exact number of days you've got to appeal your decision, is 30 days. And I've had cases where I had 6 and 8 boxes, and that was just the transcript out of the hearing. And we had to make a decision within 30 days whether we were going to appeal. And, you know, it's funny, out there in a private practice of law, people kind of make that decision every single day. They seem to be able to wade through all that stuff and come up with a decision. And once a decision's made and the appeal is filed, then the court sets the time schedule on briefing and when you're going to show up, when you're going to get a chance to orally argue, and you might get 6 months then to go back through your record, you know, and better prepare it and so on.
In this case, Mr. Chairman, though, if I understand the bill correctly, we would have to have a final agency decision written and prepared within that 30 days. So you'd have to do the evidence, you'd have to do, if you needed to do it on the remand, you'd have to do requisitions, you'd have to take evidence, you'd have to write the decision all within that period of time, if I'm understanding the CS correctly.
We give Superior Court judges 4 months, and then we quit paying them if they don't give us a decision in 4 months. How many people would be out of work right now in your department if we'd quit paying you after 4 months on one of these appeals? On the looks of things, a whole lot of folks over there would be. But enough of that banter, and thank you very much. I appreciate your comments. Let's now turn to Sue Mason. Are you there, Sue?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Sue Mason. I'm a lawyer in Anchorage with the firm of Kiesel, Young, and Logan. And I have been representing hospitals and nursing homes in appeals of Medicaid rates since about 1984. This prospective payment system went into effect in 1983, and I've been involved with the system from the beginning through all the various changes that it's gone through. I have reviewed the committee substitute for Senate Bill 106, and I do have some specific comments on that legislation. First of all, I would like to say that I think the committee substitute is preferable to the original bill because it is simpler and doesn't get into the issues of amending court rules. It just addresses the problem a little more head on, which appeals to me. The basic problem here is one of timely decisions or the absence of timely decisions. And I have had, I won't go into the details of them, but I have had some specific instances in my own cases where I've had to wait extraordinarily long times for decisions. I wanted to put this sort of in the big picture context so that we're all reading off the same page. This process is governed by the Alaska Administrative Procedure Act. And under that act, when there's a formal hearing, the hearing officer issues a proposed decision, and that proposed decision goes to the commissioner for a final decision, and that final decision can then be appealed to the Superior Court. The Administrative Procedure Act itself does not impose any time limit on how long the commissioner has to make that decision after she gets the proposed decision from the hearing officer. That was a matter of concern to the hospitals and nursing homes as far back as the 1980s. And in fact, the current version of the statute that we're dealing with, AS 4707075, that statute was amended in 1990 at the request of the hospitals and nursing homes, specifically for the purpose of imposing some deadlines. And in that 1990 amendment, the legislature added the requirement that the department adopt regulations that required a hearing to be held within 100 days, and under B2, that you see on the first page, the bottom of the first page of the committee substitute, that 1990 legislation required the commissioner within 30 days of receiving the hearing officer's proposed decision to either render a decision or remand the case to the hearing officer. First of all, it took the department 7 years to enact the regulations that that legislation required. The law was passed in 1990 requiring the department to adopt regulations that would include these time limits. In September of 1997, those regulations finally were adopted and went into effect. So there is in the regulations now a requirement that the commissioner either render a decision or remand the case within 30 days. But and that step in the process is where the current problem is. The hearing officer now is handling things expeditiously, and in my experience, there are now no inordinate delays in the process in front of the hearing officer. But where the delays are occurring is once the hearing officer's proposed decision goes to the commissioner. And what is happening is that in almost every case where the hearing officer reaches a decision in favor of the hospital or the nursing home, the commissioner remands that decision to the hearing officer to do something else with the decision, and essentially with instructions to reach a different result. But to satisfy the 30-day requirement, the commissioner does issue an order within 30 days that says this case is being remanded to the hearing officer. Then that same order says remand instructions will follow. And so in some technical sense, the 30-day deadline has been met. But then nothing can happen until the commissioner issues instructions to explain why she has remanded the case and what she intends for the hearing officer to do on remand. That process is taking always at least a month. In one case I am directly familiar with, it took 9 months. There may be cases
where it's longer. Sue, let me interrupt you there for a second.
Sure.
Yeah, we were aware of each of those things. You said you had some specific comments on this bill itself.
Yes, I do.
Okay, do you have amendments or changes you would recommend in it?
Yes, I do.
Okay, let's go for it.
Okay. The substance of this bill, I think, is good and would solve this problem. It would certainly put some extra pressure on the department. I have some concerns about the structure of the bill the way it is now, because the way it is structured now, the bill simply requires the department to adopt regulations. At the end of paragraph B, this is on the first page of the committee substitute, right before subsection 1, it says the regulations must provide that. And then 1 and 2 and 3 are things that the department must adopt into its regulations. I think it would be an improvement in the structure of the bill if if subsections 2 and 3 were broken out separately so that current subsection 2 becomes subsection C and current subsection 3 would become subsection D, so that subsections 2 and 3 are not simply things that the legislature is telling the department to put into its regulations, but that they are direct requirements that the legislature is imposing on the department. I have written this up, and I will hand it to the staff here to fax down to the committee at the end of the hearing.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate those recommendations. Do you have any other comments on this?
No, I just would thank you for taking the time to look at this. I know it can get complex and confusing, but it is a matter of great concern to the hospitals and nursing homes, particularly because the department takes the position that it's not required to pay the facilities any interest for all the time that these cases are pending and not being decided.
Yes, I understand that, too, and that's another aspect that I've been looking at.
Well, I appreciate your attention to these issues.
Thank you. Is Dan Houghton available?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that you allow me to take a few words here. In a very brief summary of some of our feelings, I'm obviously the Chief Financial Officer of Alaska Regional Hospital here in Anchorage. What our comments would be to the bill is we certainly encourage the passing of this bill, the changes here. We believe we need to have a fair and equitable solution in the appeals process. There's a considerable amount of resources that both the facility and the department commit in an appeals process within itself, and to have a system whereby we both can incur all those legal, et cetera, staff costs to prepare such an appeal, and then to have a process whereby it can go through a remand process at the end of that significant time and cost investment without some kind of a judicial relief for the facility is obviously what I'm most concerned about. It seems very contrary to what we believe is a fair and equitable solution.
Dan, you had a chance to review the CS?
Yes, I have.
And do you like the CS?
Yes, in context to what it is here, I see really no changes to be suggested here.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Any questions for Dan? I don't think we have any questions here, Dan, but thank you for hanging on up there. We really appreciate that.
Oh, thank you very much.
Senator Donnelly.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 24, as it's moving through the process, is getting focused down, and Senator Jorgensen's done some good work on that in finance to target it towards just a couple of departments. But this particular concern about one of the provisions that I really liked that was added in this committee about 24 was a general provision that set for the first time some guidelines on when a commissioner can remand decisions for further facts. And I would like to see that actually done this year to apply to all the departments, because that was a very reasonable step, because currently there's no guidelines on when a commissioner does that. I know this bill only deals with health, but it seems like that's directly on point too. And I'd love to see that incorporated, not just to deal with health, but across the board in this vehicle, because that was one element I thought was there was just no downside to.
Senator Ferguson.
Not to talk the whole lot about another bill, I did take that provision out of 24.
Yeah.
Mainly because the idea of 24 is to focus on just a few smaller divisions, and it'll still have some time limits on those three divisions. And there are big problem child anyway, except for this one. I mean, this one has its own inherent problems, which I'm not sure. We're only, like I said, on the tip of the iceberg what the problem is with these rate settings. I'm surprised they get to any decision to screw it up as their rates and stuff.
What do you think about the recommendations from Ms. Mason?
I would move that we amend to do that.
Okay, the motion is to amend line 14, striking the parenthetical 2, inserting small letter C in parentheticals on page 1, and on page 2, line 7, striking the parenthetical 3 and inserting parenthetical small letter D on line 7 in its stead. Discussion on the amendment? Is there any objection to the amendment? There being no objection, the amendment passes. Senator Donnelly, since both you and Senator Torgerson are up there, I agree with Senator Torgerson that, and this, the next referral is up to finance. I agree with him that we're just scratching the tip of this thing. I was here through the fight, as I think you were, for part of it. I think it occurred either 86 or 87. When they threw out the Medicaid Rate Reimbursement Commission that we had and took it into the department. Prior to that time, we had hospital administrators actually sitting on the board making the determinations. So they took that into the department, and then it became an advisory committee appointed by the commissioner who reviews and makes recommendations just to the commissioner in-house. And I thought there were problems with the first system, and I thought there were some other problems with the second one. There is legislation moving out of the House that will provide for an autonomous cadre of hearing officers, not hired by the department, selected in much the same fashion that judges would be selected in this state, but autonomous, not part of the court system either, so that once
on any appeal.
On any administrative appeal, you would end up with a hearing officer that wasn't owned by the department. And I appreciated the candor of Mr. Lively's comments in particular, because the more I work on reg review, the more I find that there are internal unwritten policies within departments. And these policies can have significant effect upon the outcome of contested matters within the department, and yet none of them are written down. It's kind of like, we've always done it that way, you know. That must be very troubling for anybody trying to deal with the department who isn't on the inside and know what the internal policies are that they're confronting. I just think we need to resolve some of that. But like you said, this is just the tip of the iceberg. I only hope and pray that this is the right first step to take on this, because I would like to move forward with this. And I can keep it here if you want to work on it here further, Senators. It's up to you. Other than that, I would just move it as is.
Mr. Chairman, I think that we've completed what the intent of the bill was, but I do think it needs a lot more work as far as other areas that we'd like to correct. So I'm not sure. That's your call on what you want to see it done. So
apparently,
I'd like to make a motion that we send it to Hess.
I'm not going to entertain that. Actually, Charlie France is out there on the line, and Charlie, forgive me, I hadn't seen the note here. I had I'd gotten two different pieces of paper from our good teleconference operator here, and didn't know you were hanging on out there. Charlie, did you wish to make comments?
Yes, sir, I sure would, Mr. Chairman. If I could very briefly, I would like to speak in support of the amended committee substitute for Senate Bill 106. I think that the changes that you've made in it will certainly help to begin to fix a broken process. The appeals process is clearly broken as it currently stands, and we need to do something to fix it. The department uses bureaucratic doublespeak and side shuffle and everything else in order to keep from making decisions on many of these issues, and creates tremendous problems for the small facilities out across the state. As a quick example of this, in June of 1997, I had outstanding appeals for the fiscal years 94, 95, and 96. The state approached the hospital with a settlement offer for those three fiscal years. We discussed that for a while and negotiated a settlement amount. A settlement agreement was drafted by the Attorney General's office and signed by both sides, the state and the hospital. Then in April, that was in July of 97, we signed the settlement agreement. In April of 98, the state came back and recouped $86,000 for the period that was covered by the settlement agreement, saying that they hadn't quite calculated things the way they thought they should have and all of that. We made several requests to the state to correct that recoupment to no avail, so we filed suit in Superior Court, and on March the 4th, we granted a summary judgment awarding us our $86,000 back plus interest and some of our attorney's fees. So that's just a quick example of how broken our system is here. So anyway, I would like to ask you to support, all of you to support for the Senate Bill 106 as amended. I think it's a good step in the right direction. Thank you.
Charlie, thank you very much. Any questions? Yes, Senator Torgerson.
You want a motion?
Yes.
I'd move Senate Bill 106 as amended out of committee with just out of committee. Individual recommendation.
Is there objection to the motion? There's no objection. Bill moves from committee. We're not taking up that other bill today, whatever it was. 96. Yep.
Of course.
Yeah, that was the same.
Thank you, Jake.
Yeah. Oh, finish.